This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi.
Featuring author, psychologist, and daily contributor, Siobhan Scott.
The verdict is in the Take Care of Maya trial. The Kowalski family getting more than $250 million in the verdict there. I was very shocked by this. I was expecting it to go in her favor, but not this far in her favor. Joining me to discuss, Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist and author. Siobhan, I know we've talked about this a little bit. It's a very interesting case. If you watch the documentary, it is very one-sided, but there certainly was a lot of chaos that did take place within Johns Hopkins, which I'm, again, why I agree, I think, with the verdict. But what's your thoughts on just how much they'll be receiving and just the extra $50 million they threw in there just kind of as an extra jab towards the hospital of like, you can't be doing these sort of things?
Yeah, it's a staggering amount. And, you know, my first thought watching the trial footage from yesterday, it was just the amount of emotional pain that this family is in. And I think the bulk of that pain is from the death of their mother, you know, the mother's suicide. Kids never recover from a parental suicide. I see many adults now in therapy whose parent or had a parent that suicided when they were kids. That's a wound that never heals, and it affects people for their lives. And so I think so much of this emotional intensity, this case brought this out in everyone who witnessed it, was because of Beata's death. And that's ultimately not going to be fixed by any amount of money. So it's just heartbreaking all around.
Yeah, it's not something where you can go, I mean, was justice served on something like this? Yeah. Because you can't serve justice when she is dead. It is an interesting thing, though. I mean, it is, I think, somewhat precedent setting. Of the fact that they did correlate her suicide with the actions of the hospital, stating that, yes, because of what happened with the hospital, she did take her own life. Obviously, it seems there was probably some other underlying mental health conditions going on with Beata. Certainly, you know, a horrible thing that she ended up taking her own life and will no longer be there for her daughter as she grows up and her family. But that's an interesting correlation to make, to be able to say in a courtroom that because you did, this person ended their own life, and then holding someone accountable that way.
Yeah, and I have to say, I lean heavily on the side of mom had some problems. And I think I watched, I would say, nearly all of the trial and took very careful notes, particularly on all the medical testimony. And the hospital was not wrong to put the brakes on these massive doses of ketamine, which could have killed her. And there was a lot of testimony that she was addicted to ketamine. And this is why she was having some of the severe stomach pain that caused her father to bring her into Johns Hopkins. She was suffering, but that was ketamine withdrawal. And the doses that she was given on the outpatient basis by the ketamine doctor were 10 times what was considered safe. And she was also on Valium. She was on Dilaudid, which is an opioid. She had been on massive doses of steroids. None of these were going to be recommended by a conventional medical doctor. Now, it was an unusual case in so many ways because you had a child presenting with a very unusual set of symptoms that are still being disputed. Was it really this complex regional pain syndrome? It didn't quite fit that, according to some of the best experts in the world. It didn't really fit that. She was being treated by a couple of very unusual doctors who really liked ketamine and outside the scope of what a typical doctor would do. It was unusual that her mom took her to Mexico for a procedure that they even said had a 50-50 chance of killing her, this week-long ketamine coma, which during that, this came out in testimony, she did vomit while intubated. She did aspirate that vomit and caught pneumonia. Mm-hmm. So her odds of dying from this treatment were really high. And I did consult with a woman I know who's a pediatric anesthesiologist in a pain center here on the West Coast, brilliant woman, a teacher. And she said, there's no way anyone in the United States would have gone along with this treatment regimen. You know, it's just, it was not safe. And so I think for Johns Hopkins to say, we want to wean her off these drugs and we want to go with occupational therapy, psychotherapy, physical therapy, all the conventional doctors from some of the best places in the country all said that would have been the right treatment protocol. And apparently, mom was simply not going to go along with that. So it's an unusual case with an unusual illness, an unusual mother. It did set off red flags with multiple doctors from multiple places about the, is this Munchausen? Is there an emotional, psychological component here? So I think the breakdown was with the Department of Children and Families and how Dr. Smith was involved with a very heavy hand. The ideal outcome would have been, can we communicate with mom in a way that would win her over to perhaps a safer treatment protocol for Maya so that we didn't end up with this power struggle and, you know, cutting off all contact and, you know, the thing that just escalated the emotional intensity. And certainly that emotional intensity was a factor in Beata's choice. But to say the hospital directly caused it, you know, I think it's more complicated than that. It's just, it's a messy case.
I mean, I agree. At the beginning, when she was brought in and they were realizing all of these things that she was on and the treatments that she was having, the mothers, the way she was reacting to everything, it did make sense, certainly at the beginning, at least in my opinion, of how the hospital treated her and the case in general. Was this something where the hospital looked at the mother, the way that she had been reacting, the way that her daughter had been being treated? I believe Beata and her father thought that they were doing the best they possibly could for their daughter. I have no doubt about that. But sometimes people are wrong. And sometimes people get bad advice from bad people or people who are well-intentioned but just have incorrect beliefs on how to treat someone. But they were obviously very dug in as to this is the only thing that will work for my daughter. Did the hospital then truly err if their thought was, look, if we do involve everybody here, there's a good chance that she can pull her out of here and then end up killing her daughter inadvertently just because of what they knew? And they're lucky they did it earlier. But was it the hospital being too heavy-handed in that way, or was it more so, you know, about how it was handled? I can see where they would have stepped in and thought, we let her go, she's going to die. The treatment she's been getting will kill her at some point. So the only thing we can do right now is keep her here. This is not an ideal situation for anybody, but if we can get them separated from her right now, we can actually get her better. Obviously, the way that was handled is much more in question, and some of the things that were said to Maya, allegedly, in that from the Health and Human Services doctor, very bizarre, but I could also see someone who's just kind of off, not, you know, having correct boundaries as well with some of those statements. How wrong was the hospital in all of this? Where did they go wrong? What were some of the places where, if they handled this differently, they wouldn't be in this situation today?
Yeah, you know, I can't say that medically anything that the hospital did was wrong. Now, when it gets into the social worker's behavior and not having good boundaries, that's a different area entirely. But I didn't hear anything from any of the physician testimony or the medical, the nursing testimony that indicated that they had done anything to harm her or that they had any intention of not doing everything they could to help her recover. And really, it wasn't the hospital that made the decisions about separating Maya from Beata. That was from the investigator for the Department of Child and Welfare. Mm-hmm. You know, that's where that decision came from, and from the court system who cut the contact. And that's where I would like to have seen, could we have a softer approach with that?
Yeah.
You know, because I think absolutely cutting contact, why was dad able to have supervised visits at the hospital, but mom was not able to have supervised visits? You know, it just seemed to me that was where the really heavy-handed aspect of it came in. And I can't say that was on Johns Hopkins' end. You know, they were sort of put in the middle here. They were trying to transfer her to a different children's hospital that had a very specific pain program for children involving psychotherapy and occupational therapy and physical therapy, where she could have had the very best treatment there. And the parents wouldn't agree to that program. So it just seemed like a power struggle that got started early on. There were a lot of different players involved in it, and people weren't on the same page, and it just was a fiasco.
What sort of implications is this going to have in terms of like a ripple effect throughout the medical community with a judgment of this level?
Yeah, the physician I talked to was, and this was before the judgment came in, but she said this is exactly why so many young people won't go into medicine anymore. She said she runs into it all the time, and so many physicians are leaving medicine because of the fear of these kind of outcomes. So I'm sure it's going to have an impact on, you know, defensive medicine, practicing how do we protect ourselves. And, you know, to some degree, some of that's good. They need to be thinking that way.
Sure.
But on the other hand, the whole thing is just unfortunate.
Sick of the ads?
We opt to.
Start listening with no commercials now and get access to all of our episodes in advance of everyone else.
Become a True Crime Today Premium Plus subscriber on Apple Podcasts.
Search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts or go to our podcast page and sign up now.
True Crime Today Premium Plus.
Sign up now.